This episode of Common Mystics takes us back to World War II and the small, isolated Pacific island of Niihau, which became the stage for a dramatic series of events that would ripple through American history. I'm Jennifer James.
I'm Jill Stanley.
We're psychics.
We're sisters.
We are common mystics. We find extraordinary stories in ordinary places, and today's story takes us back to Hawaii.
That's right. This is our second Hawaii story. I'm so excited.
I know.
Can you please remind the people of our intention as we were chilling out on Hawaii's islands?
We asked the spirits to lead us to a verifiable story previously unknown to us that allows us to give voice to the voiceless.
That's right. Now, we did not leave the island of Maui, but we were getting strong hits that led us to this story. Mm. One of the hits that you were getting was Japanese people. Do you remember?
Yes. We were in an old cemetery, and I had the distinct impression of Japanese people on Hawaii specific to World War II times. That was coming through really strong.
And Lisa, who is well-versed in Hawaiian history so much more than us, was like, right. No, you're probably feeling Chinese. And you were like, But no, you were feeling Japanese.
Lisa was so wonderful to host us. She was our friend that we were visiting in Hawaii, and we love her. So thanks, Lisa.
We love you, Lisa. I was feeling poor communication, people not being able to communicate with each other, especially throughout the chain of the Hawaiian islands.
And I was feeling fires.
True that.
Fires.
But not just fires, fires that were purposefully caused.
Yeah. That's what you were picking up on, like purposefully set fires.
Right. It wasn't like an oopsie doopsie. It was like, no, this is arson.
Right.
And then I was feeling a woman who seemed to have been overlooked and kind of like almost patronized. Like, oh, you.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that you were feeling like a native Hawaiian woman who was weaving.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Almost correct. Like very quaint, very, you know, like overlooked, like, oh, she's just
domesticated. She's just doing the weaving. Don't worry about her a bit.
Right.
So what did our research tell us about these hits?
Our research brought us back to December 1941. Jill, this was a very tense time as the world watched the terrifying progress of World War II. Now, you and I have a good bit of knowledge about World War II in Europe.
Right.
Because
our grandparents,
our
grandparents met in a labor camp. Under
in Germany.
In Germany, under German rule. That's how our grandparents met.
Right. So we have a good amount of knowledge about the European theater just from hearing personal stories from grandma and, you know, what they survived and went through. But really, we don't know anything about the Pacific theater.
And
so
you
this
know what?
Was very new to us.
Not even that. Not a fan. Like, Dad used to watch World War II movies and, like, fighter planes. I had zero Fs to give on that. Like, not a fan of that genre type of movie, so.
Right. However, this story is so compelling, like, and it takes place in the Pacific Theater. So, at that time, December 1941, in the Pacific, relations between the United States and Japan were spiraling fast. Now, the Japanese were wanting to expand their territory, and they were doing it aggressively, hence World War II. And the United States had placed an embargo on Japan, crippling their access to oil and other essential resources. So they were kind of pissed.
Yeah.
And diplomatic discussions were going nowhere, and there was growing frustration on both sides.
Okay.
Well, tension snapped as the Japanese launched a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941, propelling America into World War II.
I know about Pearl Harbor. It's like the one thing I know about the Pacific World War II war action.
On the morning of December 7th, 1941, around 7:55 a.m., the tranquility of that Sunday morning was shattered as Japanese fighter planes descended on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. Within hours, they had inflicted catastrophic damage to the U.S. Navy's Pacific Fleet. Battleships like the USS Arizona and the USS Oklahoma were among the most severely hit, with the Arizona sinking completely and the Oklahoma capsizing. The attack also took a heavy toll on human lives, with over 2,400 Americans killed and nearly 1,200 wounded. Now, this unexpected assault jolted the United States out of its isolationist stance and led directly to its entry into World War II. The phrase, "Remember Pearl Harbor," became a rallying cry for the nation as it mobilized for war.
Okay, so the United States during the early 1940s didn't sense any threat, I mean, any serious credible threat, even with World War II raging in Europe and Asia. I mean, why were they playing footsies with the, like, being defensive or offensive, you know? They should have been more prepared for an attack, especially if it was so tense with Japan.
I think there are a lot of talks about what America should do as World War II was raging in Europe and in Asia, but Americans were divided over what the role of the United States should be because we weren't actively, personally involved in the conflict up until that point, right? Mm. And people were like, well, should we get involved at all? Right. And so the United States had kind of an ambivalence toward the ongoing war that stemmed out of the isolationist views that developed out of the United States engagement in World War One.
Yeah. World War One was horrible. So I understand them being a little sheepish when it comes to jumping into war. But I mean, shit be tense. You need a plan for an attack, especially, you know what I mean? Anyway, go on.
Well, In World War II, people remembered World War One. Like, people were alive. They remembered it. Like, today, we don't remember World War II. We weren't alive then. But in the 1940s, many people were alive who remembered World War II.
Because World War One started in 1917. So it was just about 30 years later, right?
No, World War One started in 1914.
Okay.
To 1918. Okay. And so in the World War II started in 1939. So people were alive and they remembered. In World War One, hundreds of thousands of Americans were killed or maimed. And people blamed the president's foreign policies for that. The president believed that an international cooperative was a way to ensure peace.
A lot of Americans were disillusioned by that concept because we went into World War One and a lot of people got died or maimed, like you said. So they were like, screw that. The last time we put our necks on a line, you guys got so many of our young men killed, so we ain't doing it again. I don't care if they're fighting in Europe. I don't care if they're fighting in Asia. So that was like Americans being like, yeah, no, we don't want to get involved. But still, Jennifer, but still, you know, you have an adversary so close to one of your
territories.
Yes, one of your territories, one of your naval bases. You should have been a little bit more like on the ball. That's all I'm saying, United States. Just saying, you needed to look over your shoulder. You didn't. It was foolish. So tell me, who were...
I'm going to stop you there because I think you're being a little... We did have a naval base there. But we had a naval base there and we did not know about the attack. It was a successful attack. Let's just leave it at that.
It was successful, but I think we should have been more on the ball. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, who were these brave people that got in planes and been dropping bombs on Hawaii? Who awoken a sleeping giant? Who they?
The sleeping giant being the United States.
Yeah, that's a famous quote.
The Japanese pilots who executed the attack on Pearl Harbor were part of a meticulously planned mission by the Japanese Navy. It was a strike force known as Kido Butai, translation meaning mobile force. And the sleeping giant quote you just referenced was attributed to Admiral Yamamoto. He was the mastermind behind the attack on Pearl Harbor. And it was apparently him who was believed to have said, "I fear all we have done is awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve."
Wow. I always thought that that quote was like from an ally or from like an American general. Okay.
It does sound like regret there. Like, oh, shit, does. What did we just do? Because America did mobilize and I think did help turn the tide of the war for sure.
Well, not to mention the U.S., wasn't that the atomic bomb in retaliation to Pearl Harbor?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
I mean, so yeah, bad move, guys, bad move. Okay, now back to the pilots, Jennifer. Tell me a little bit more about these elite force of men.
Oh my goodness, these pilots were highly trained and experienced, many having honed their skill during Japan's earlier military campaigns in China. Japan had a long, illustrious military presence and military history, so they were prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
From what I know about Japanese sensibility towards manufacturing is like they are very effective and repetitive and like
efficient.
Precise.
And yes. Yeah, yes. They know their shit.
That's scary.
Yeah. Among the pilots were Lieutenant Fuchida, who led the first wave of the attack, and the pilot Shigenori Nishikaichi, whose plane was damaged and later crashed on the Hawaiian island of Niihau, which led to what is now referred to as the Niihau incident.
Okay, I've never heard of Niihau. You need to tell me everything. This incident you speak of, never heard of it.
It's really dramatic, Jill. I don't know if you can handle it.
Okay, if I can handle the Mary Jo Kopechne story out of Chappaquiddick, I can handle this. So please, please tell me.
I can't believe you said Chappaquiddick right.
I did. I've been practicing.
I've been practicing my Japanese names too.
I'm really impressed with you because I would have just been like, pass, pass, pass. Like I would be like, a nice young pilot.
Mm-hmm. Right. So during the attack on Pearl Harbor, Japanese pilot Shigenori Nishikaichi's plane was damaged by multiple hits while escorting bombers over Bellows Field, a U.S. Army air base at Pearl Harbor.
I didn't realize that the Americans were fighting back. That makes me feel better.
See, yeah. The Americans were somewhat prepared, all right?
I was wrong.
You were very You're very, very hard on the U.S. military. All right, we're not going to get into it.
Okay. Let's agree to disagree, but I am impressed that they were firing back. How were they firing back?
A few sailors were able to man anti-aircraft guns and fire at the Japanese. Troops on the ground started firing rifles into the sky.
That's kind of stupid.
Those have to be like big guns, though. Like, these aren't little. So. These are big guns.
I hope it's not like a hunting rifle because I would be like, I don't think that's going to work. Okay, go on.
American pilots took to flight and actually shot down 10 Japanese bombers and fighter jets. Good job.
Yeah.
The American Navy. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, this, as bad as the attack went for the United States and its casualties, it could have been so much worse.
I can't imagine the bravery. The enemy is here. They are above you. They are bombing you. And someone like me would be like running to hide. And yet these brave people grab guns and get into jets and then go into the sky. Are you kidding me? It really moves me. The bravery is something that I don't understand. And I'm so grateful for those people who serve and protect us because I can't imagine like seeing the enemy and getting into a fighter jet to go confront the enemy. Wow.
What I would do is probably be like running to the fighter jet all like pissed off and shit and then like fell over and like break my leg. Like that is something I would
do. And soil like, yourself. Don't forget and that. Soil yourself. Right.
And yes. Soil myself. Yes. And it would be mess. Okay.
Right. Anyway. Okay. So the American Navy targeted Japanese submarines and even sank one near the entrance of the harbor. Okay.
This was a full-on attack. I had no idea.
Impromptu. impromptu, full on. See, and it's happening.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, that's like, how did we, our intelligence fail? Like, we should have been a little more prepared. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say.
You know, you should talk. Half the time, you're not prepared when we sit down to record.
Oh, my God. I am so prepared today. I am you so are prepared, prepared right now.
Yeah, today is...
Stop it. You like it when I'm not prepared because you today think it's is more natural.
Uh-huh. God. Okay. Are you ready?
No.
Okay, Miss Prepared. All right. That's right. During the second wave of Japanese attacks, Japanese pilot Shigenori's plane was seriously damaged. Okay, back to our pilot, Shigenori. All right. You're going to remember his name because we're going to be talking about him a lot.
Shigenori.
His plane was damaged. It got hit multiple times. See, the rifles worked, Jill. So shut it.
You don't know if that was from the rifles. Go on.
And his plane was, like, seriously damaged to the point where his fuselage, which I don't know what it is, but it sounds really important. His fuselage was hit and his plane rapidly lost fuel. That's always bad.
Yeah.
Always bad.
That's bad if you're in a car when you're rapidly losing fuel. You don't want to lose fuel.
Oh, my God.
No. Talk about a mess. I would, like, are you kidding? Yes, I would have shit myself definitely there too. A lot of shitting your pants in this episode.
Pilot Shigenori realized that he wasn't going to be able to make it back to the aircraft carrier. Okay? So he ended up crash landing on the Hawaiian island of Niihau.
Okay. I'm so surprised that I'm interested in following this because this usually to me is the most boring content of World War II. So please continue. I'm fascinated. So he crash lands. What now?
Right. Well, great for that transition. I'm sure that that excited many people.
And well, aren't you? I mean, you guys, aren't you interested in this? Like, I swear, I do not like this type of story.
So that was actually the plan all along. Like the Japanese are like, okay, if anything goes wrong, you are going to crash land on Niihau. That was the emergency plan. Kind of like when you do fire drills in school or, you know what I mean? Like tornado drills. Okay, so that was a pre-established plan. They're like, Niihau. Niihau is the place. And then wait on Niihau and a rescue submarine will come and pick you up.
Okay. So it was a contingency plan.
Yeah, exactly. So, Niihau, why Niihau? First of all, it is the westernmost main Hawaiian island, okay? Mm. So, it's farthest to the west and hence Japan.
Closest to Japan then.
Yeah, closest to Japan. And it's one of the smallest and most remote with like less than 200 residents and no electricity and no telephones. So, anything that happens on Niihau, like communication is slow AF. And actually, the Japanese, they might not have even thought anyone would be there because the island is so remote.
So technically, this guy crash landed in an American territory behind enemy lines, basically.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
And what he believed was a remote island, potentially uninhabited, but if they were inhabited by very few people.
Okay. Then what? What do we got? What happened?
Okay, so he crashes. He crashes like 19 feet in front of a man, in front of a Hawaiian man named Hawila Keleohano.
Can you imagine if you were Hawila? Wouldn't you be like, oh my God, what just happened? Totally. Seriously. Again, shit yourself. You're just chilling. You're sitting there. You're drinking your beer. It's an evening in Hawaii. And then all of a sudden, a big ass plane just comes 19 feet from you and your house.
So Hawila is just home. He's there. And a plane crashes like 20 feet in front of him.
Okay. Messed up.
Hawila, he's a native Hawaiian man. And he recognized the plane and its pilot as Japanese. Now, he knew, and the people on this remote island did know, that Japan and America were not getting along. Like, they were having problems in their relationship.
Right.
We can all commiserate with that. Sometimes that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So he took the pilot's pistol and he took the pilot's papers. Now, Pilot Shigenori, he was like dazed from just having crash landed, right? So that gave Hawila an opportunity to like take everything he thought might be important.
That's smart. Yeah. That was smart.
Yeah. Given that, hey, you know, we're not really on good terms. We, meaning the United States, is not on good terms with Japan right now. So I'm going to take your shit from this plane. Now, remember, though, this is a very small island. There is no electricity. There is no telephone service. So no one on the island was aware of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Oh, wow.
Like, that information had not gotten there. But Hawila, he is a good old Hawaiian native man. And he has a sense of hospitality, and he welcomes this stranger. And he throws him a party.
You know what? Honestly, I can totally see that. The Hawaiian people are the kindest people you'll ever meet.
They're very welcoming.
He's like, you crashed. Hey, let's have a little shindig. Let's get together.
Yeah. Maybe they had a luau. Who knows? Do you think they roasted a pig?
They probably did. Now, I have a question, though.
Yeah.
Wouldn't someone at the party be like, so, hey, about you flying by and crashing, what was that about? You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't there be questions?
Okay, so communication was difficult, okay, because the pilot, Shigenori, barely spoke English and he did not speak any Hawaiian. But there were first generation Japanese immigrants living on this island of Niihau.
Okay, convenient. Get me one of those so we can...
Yeah, so the Hawaiians, they go to first generation Japanese man named Ishimatsu Shintani.
Okay.
So they go get Ishimatsu. Ishimatsu is like, hey, my name is Ishimatsu. And he introduces himself and he speaks Japanese because he's first generation. And they exchange brief sentences, he and the pilot Shigenori. And then
Ishimatsu was like, you guys, we got a problem.
Actually, no. So after talking to pilot Shigenori. Ishimatsu suddenly like stops talking and freezes and then like turns around and quietly sneaks out of the party like real quick. Doesn't say anything, but just leaves.
He pulled a Chloe. You know how when your dog's kind of like freaked out, she's like, she freezes and kind of just like tips over. That's what he did. He was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's suspicious.
He acted like a Labrador retriever.
It's pretty suspicious.
Not. It is really suspicious. So he leaves and they're like, well, we need another interpreter. So they find another Japanese-speaking islander to help communicate with the pilot now that Ishimatsu is suddenly gone. So this time they find a man named Yoshio Harada. Now, Yoshio Harada, again, he is a Japanese Hawaiian, and he is married to Irene Harada. Yoshio and Irene, both Japanese. Now, Yoshio was what they referred to as Nisai. He was Hawaiian born, but identified as Japanese ethnically.
Got it. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So he was born in Hawaii, but his parents were from Japan.
Right. Exactly. Gotcha. Gotcha. And he identified as Japanese.
Mm-hmm. And he probably spoke Japanese in his house growing up. It was probably his first language.
Exactly. Gotcha. That's right. So pilot Shigenori, now he's talking to Yoshi, the second interpreter. Mm-hmm. And he tells Yoshi about the attack on Pearl Harbor.
That's bold.
That is bold. Well, he's trusting Yoshio. He sees Yoshio as a friend of his.
That's insane.
Uh-huh. Not only does he tell Yoshio about Pearl Harbor, but he also says, hey, and that guy Hawila, remember Hawila?
Mm-hmm. The guy's house that I crashed in front of?
Right. He took my papers and he took my gun and he confiscated all my shit and I need it. I need my shit from Hawila. So can you, you know Hawila, Yoshio, since like there's 50 people living here. Like, you know Hawila, can you get him to give me back my stuff? It's really important that I have my stuff returned to me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Yoshi is now armed with this new information. He knows about the attack on Pearl Harbor. He knows that pilot Shigenori is an enemy of the United States. And he also knows that Hawila has important papers belonging to the enemy.
Not only that, but the pilot told Yoshio that his instructions, if he were to be captured on American soil, was to destroy any kind of evidence, like paperwork. And Hawila has all that stuff. So he's like, not only do we need it, we need to destroy it. Right. So now, Yoshio, is he sounding the alarm? Is he blowing a whistle? Is he banging on drums? What is happening?
He is not. He is telling the other Nisais on the island, the other Japanese Hawaiians. He's only telling them. But the Hawaiians, the native Hawaiians, they're not sharing this information with them. So here you see.
Sus as fuck. Like, wow. Yeah. Wow.
They're kind of forming an alliance.
Yeah, they are. I'm feeling very uncomfortable.
Are you?
I am. So in the meantime, while Yoshio is spilling the tea to every Japanese-speaking Hawaiian, what are the native Hawaiians doing? Do they have any indication?
Yeah, so there was no telephone, there's no electricity, but they did have a radio, a battery-operated radio.
And did they turn it on? Were they trying to figure things out? Were they like, wait a second?
On this battery-operated radio. And you know what I love about this? I can just see them, the native Hawaiians, all huddled around this battery-operated radio with the static, thinking, holy shit right now. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that someone probably turned it on because of the way the Japanese-speaking natives were reacting, right? Like, one freezes and leaves.
And keeping things to themselves.
Mm-hmm. One is commiserating with the other Japanese-speaking Hawaiians. They're like, I need to get to the bottom of this. Why are Japanese pilots falling out of the sky?
Yeah, yeah. So they hear this information on the battery-operated radio, and now they know about Pearl Harbor and the Japanese attack on this American territory. So the Hawaiians were like, hey, Yoshio, do you have a minute? Like, it seems that our guest of honor was part of, like, a serious ambush and targeted another one of the islands. And Yoshio, like, comes clean and he's like, yeah, I was just about to tell you guys about that.
Sure you were.
I was just, sure you were. But we're having such a nice party. You know, how about this luau?
What happened?
Isn't the pork great?
Right? My mouth is full of pork. I was just about to say something.
Yeah.
Pass me the pineapple.
No. So Yoshio's like, yeah, yeah, I do know about it. I was going to tell you guys. I didn't want to spoil the party. Yeah, he's a fighter pilot. He was protecting the Japanese bomber planes that attacked Pearl Harbor. Isn't that crazy? Nothing ever exciting happens here.
I could see that. Okay, so wow. So now the natives were like, what in the hell?
Right.
What is happening right now?
Right.
Are they going to tell everyone on the island, like, we need to rope this guy up? We need to capture him? We need to keep him safe for
imprison
our allies
him.
To come?
Right, because he is the enemy, right?
Yeah. Not only is he an enemy, but he's been like, I'm actively sure they're looking for him. Like, someone's actively looking for this guy.
Absolutely. So here's the thing. Niihau is actually a private island owned by the Robinson family, even to this day.
That's some crazy shit.
That is some crazy shit.
My family left me nothing but like crippling anxiety, alcohol problems.
Shut up. You're very blessed. Shut up. Okay. So the Robinson family owns the island of Niihau. And as it turns out, every week back in 1941, Aylmer Robinson would travel to the island from the neighboring island of Kauai. It was like his family had like a weekend home on Niihau. So the Hawaiians come up with a new plan. And they're like, now that we know this pilot is an enemy of the United States, the Hawaiians were going to like hold him and keep him under guard and until Aylmer Robinson arrives in his boat, because you know he comes like clockwork every week from Kauai.
And technically, the people that are living on this island are servants of the Robinson family. They're there to, yeah. These people that are living, the natives on the island, are living there to support the family's estate on Niihau.
I hope they're paid well.
I mean, and they really are in a beautiful place and it's remote. I mean, I can think of worse jobs. And he's only there once a week. Are you kidding?
Hang in there, guys. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. We are so excited to unveil the first book in our series entitled Common Mystics Present Ghost on the Road Volume 1, Murders and Mysterious Deaths.
It's everything you love about Common Mystics and more.
It's a retelling of 10 of our favorite stories from our pod with exciting extras.
Extras like souvenirs, what we took away from the experience, and what to know if you go, if you decide to travel in our footsteps.
Pre-order the Kindle edition now. All other formats of the book will be available for purchase at Amazon.com on July 1st, 2023.
Thanks, guys. Now back to the show.
So the plan was to capture the pilot, keep him under guard, and hold on to him until Aylmer could come and get him and bring him to the proper authorities. But there was a problem with the plan.
What was the problem with the plan?
Well, unbeknownst to the Hawaiians on Niihau, the U.S. military implemented a ban on all boat traffic after the attack. So they waited for Aylmer Robinson, but he never came because he couldn't because of the ban. However, however, Yoshio speaks up and he's like, hey, you guys, you have been staying up and watching the prisoner this whole time. Well, why don't you give him to me? I'll put him up in my house and we'll be all good. Like, it's my turn.
Yeah, but Yoshio was the guy at first that kept a secret that this was the bomber of, or a guy protecting the bomber from. Yes. I don't know, Jennifer. I don't like that idea.
Right, right. And I bet a lot of people didn't like it either, but they agreed to it as long as 5 guards would be stationed outside Yoshio's home.
You know, they were just tired. They're like, fine, but you just take 5 other guys.
Fine, just take him. Mm-hmm. So there were guards outside Yoshio and his wife Irene's home, okay, to make sure that there was no funny business between Yoshio, who was a Japanese ethnically, and the pilot, okay?
Mm-hmm. Shigenori.
Shigenori, thank you.
The thing is, though, Jennifer, Yoshio obviously is sympathetic, right, mm-hmm. to the pilot,
right.
Shigenori.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I would feel like it wouldn't be in the best interest of the Hawaiians to put these two together because they speak the same language right. that not many other people on the island speak. There can be funny business. I'm calling funny business on that.
Right. They could be discussing anything, like further enemy plots.
Yes.
Right?
You're exactly right. In front of the five guards that don't speak Japanese.
You're exactly right. And the two men did have an opportunity not only to converse, but to commiserate and to plan.
Called it.
Now, remember the first Japanese man who froze and walked away during the party when he translated what Pilot Shigenori said?
What was his name?
Ishimatsu,
yes. Ishimatsu was acting shady AF. And then you all like, yeah, I remember
okay.
that.
Okay, so he enters back into our story.
Okay.
On December 12th, 5 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Ishimatsu approached Hawila, the man who had the pilot's papers and belongings.
Mm-hmm.
Ishimatsu approached Hawila and he offered Hawila $200 for the papers.
Mm-mm.
Hawila wouldn't give them to him.
Hell yeah, Hawila.
Ishimatsu begged him, and said, this is a matter of life and death for this pilot.
This is just embarrassing, Ishimatsu.
It's just embarrassing. Shigenori needs his papers. Like, it's really important. But Hawila was not moved. So at the very same time that this is happening and Ishimatsu is like pleading with Hawila, at the same time funny business is happening at the Yoshio's house.
What?
Uh-huh.
So what is happening?
Irene, Yoshio's wife, suddenly apparently wants to like cut up the rug and turns on an old phonograph all loud.
Okay.
So she turns on her record player, basically.
Someone got bitten by the jitterbug. My right? goodness.
Now, the loud music is playing, and during this time, Yoshio and Pilot Shigenori overpowered the guard. There was only one guard at that moment in front of the house. I don't know what happened to the other 4. Don't ask me.
Are
there was
you
only one pilot.
Kidding me?
No, they planned this, surely. Irene turns the music on. Yoshio and Pilot Shigenori overtake the guard. They lock the guard in the warehouse and they take a shotgun and the pilot's pistol, and now they're armed and they're free.
Great. Now they're armed. Now where are they going? What's happening now?
Well, they headed to Hawila's house because they're hoping to meet They're hoping to meet Ishimatsu there with the pilot's papers. But they make it to Hawila's house. They don't see Ishimatsu because you know what?
What?
Ishimatsu was unsuccessful and he was scared and fled into the forest so that he wouldn't go back and have to tell Yoshio and Shigenori that he failed his plan to bribe Hawila to get the papers.
Oh, I didn't think that Ishimatsu can get any worse in my eyes, but legit got worse. Like, what a coward. Yes. I'm just going to go in the fields until all this dies down.
So he's hiding in the forest.
Oh my God.
Yoshio and Shigenori, they get to Hawila's house. He just finished saying no to Ishimatsu, and he steps into his outhouse for some alone time.
Mm. I mean, that's fair.
A little bit more shit in this story. So, Hawila's in his outhouse. And from his seat, he sees Yoshio and Pilot Shigenori approach with another guard at gunpoint. And Yoshio and Shigenori are prodding the guard around the property, looking for Hawila and the papers, while Hawila is hiding in the outhouse.
Can you even imagine? Oh my God.
I know.
Good thing he's in the outhouse, because you know.
This reminds me of hide and go seek as a kid. Yes. I always wet my pants when I was hiding. I hate hide and go seek. It's a
phenomenon.
Too much for me.
Yes, yeah. 100%. I would always have to run home, and sometimes I didn't make it.
So you're right. Good thing he was in the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoshio and Shigenori were unable to locate Hawila. I guess they didn't check the outhouse. What idiots.
No.
You always check the... you know what I mean? Idiots.
I mean, he must have been really quiet. Can you even imagine? Oh my gosh, I cannot.
Okay, so when they couldn't find him, they're like, all right, he's gone. Let's check out the crashed aircraft. So they go to the wreckage. And while they're in the wreckage, which remember is like 20 feet away from Hawila's house, Hawila busts out of the outhouse and runs as fast as he can to alert the residents in the nearby village about what's happening, that Yoshio is with Shigenori and that Shigenori is free and they're now plotting.
Basically, he was like, ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Hawishio is a traitor. Yeah, got it.
Yoshio is a traitor. Right. So Hawila is sounding the alarm with the Hawaiians. And at first, no one believes him. And the villagers are like, wait, what the fuck? The guy that we just threw a party for? You know what I mean? They're shocked. Right. They're confused. Eventually, although they weren't truly convinced, they're like, well, let's just be safe. So they evacuate the village and the women and the children are hiding. They find hiding places in caves and thickets and distant beaches because just in case they don't want to be around.
That would suck so bad.
I know. Smart on their part. So Hawila, he didn't have the papers anymore. He gave the pilot's papers to a relative. And then he set out in a boat with five others to paddle to Kauai for help.
Jeez, oh, Pete, my God.
The upper body strength needed, I don't even know. Now, Elmer Robinson, the guy who owned the island, who was supposed to be coming to it but couldn't because of the ban, although he was unable to travel to Niihau due to the travel ban, was aware of the trouble on the island.
Why? How?
Well, they had no telephone, but the Hawaiians were able to communicate to the people on Kauai by using kerosene lanterns and flashing signals and reflectors towards the island of Kauai.
That's pretty impressive.
That is supes impressive.
Like, legit.
Yeah. So they were given the heads up, and it took... approximately, like, it would take 10 to 15 hours to paddle from one island to another. But so Hawila's in the boat with his party and the other, because it needed to be done. He needed to go get some help.
Okay, tell me about the hooligans on the island still.
Okay, so Yoshio and the pilot Shigenori, they're at the crash site, right? They're at the plane. And they're trying to work the radio to contact the Japanese military.
Oh my God, these people. Yeah.
Thank God they were not able to get the radio to work. But Shigenori was able to get a 7mm machine gun from the wreckage.
Oh, God.
And then they set fire to the plane, and they set fire to Hawila's home and all his stuff.
Hawila's having a really bad week. Like, this is just a bad few days for this man.
For real.
That's
this is war,
so
though.
Sad. Why did they have to do that? They didn't have to burn his house.
Well, this is war, and they were probably trying to destroy the pilot's papers if they were in Hawila's possession in the house.
What kind of papers? Like, why are these papers so important?
We're talking about wartime maps, radio codes, attack plans. Like, this would be very important information for the U.S. military to get their hands on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see that.
Okay. So, now it's dawn. Daybreak is coming. Yoshio and the pilot Shigenori walk down to the home of two different people, Hawaiian natives, Ben and his wife Ella Kanahele.
Okay, what do they want with them?
They go to the home and they demand that Ben bring them Hawila.
What?
Yeah, so they just march into Ben and Ella's home and they're like, at gunpoint, Ben, go get us Hawila.
What?
Right.
Like,
why are you
having dinner?
I know.
What is happening?
So Ben happened to know that Hawila wasn't on the island anymore. Like, Ben knew that he was paddling for help, but Ben bought some time. He pretended to be out looking for him. But after a while, Ben circling around, he came and checked on Ella, you know, because he left his wife in the house with these two enemies.
Sure. So he was like going around like, where are you? Hawila, Hawila.
Right.
And then came back, circled back so he can be like, hey, Ella, how you doing?
Right. Exactly.
Make sure. Mm-hmm.
Right. So he gave himself away. And pilot Shigenori it was clear to him that Ben had deceived him and he really wasn't looking for Hawila after all. Now, Yoshio was like, Ben, this pilot is going to kill everybody in the village if Hawila doesn't return with Shigenori's papers. Okay,
it's
Ben?
Like,
so now this is on you, Ben. Everybody's going to die, the entire village, if you don't get Shigenori's papers and Hawila right
that's
now.
That's really, really, really thick, like really rich. Thank you, Hoshio, or whatever the hell your name is. Like, we're in this situation because you betrayed us. It is not on me to get Hawila because you're a traitor.
Right. Pilot Shigenori. This is where shit goes really wrong.
How much wrong? How much more wrong can this get?
Pilot Shigenori was handing a firearm to Yoshio when Ben and Ella recognized the opportunity to act.
Okay, what is that? What does that mean?
They launched themselves at the two men. So they basically like jumped on them.
Uh-oh.
The pilot tried to pull out another pistol in his booth to shoot them. But Ella was like holding on and onto his arm. And so he couldn't maneuver. And that's when Yoshio pulled Ella off Shigenori. And Shigenori regained control of his arm. He was able to get his pistol out of his boot, and he shot Ben. He shot him three times.
Oh.
He shot him in the groin, in the stomach, and the upper leg. He was shot up.
Uh-uh.
But by some miracle, Ben, like, he wasn't down. He only seemed irritated by these bullet wounds. His adrenaline was pumping full force, and he took hold of the pilot, and he threw him into the wall. And that's when Ella acted, and she picked up a rock, and she started bashing Shigenori on the head, like, systematically, as if she were in a trance, just beating him in the head again and again and again. I know. So, Shigenori, the pilot, now his head beaten in, he's lifeless on the ground. And just to make sure that he's really dead, Ben slit his throat to ensure that he was indeed lifeless.
I am speechless.
Yoshio
was like, ooh, and like walking backwards out of that scene, be like, well, I guess I made a mistake.
Yoshio witnessed this scene, and rather than being overpowered by his neighbors, he turned the shotgun on himself and took his own life.
This is absolutely horrifying and seems like an action movie script. How can this possibly be real life?
It's totally real life.
Did Hawila make it to Kauai for help?
Yes. Hawila and the five other people that he took with him did make it to Kauai. It took him 15 hours to get there.
Nope.
In the meantime, Ella left her husband's side to find help and first aid for Ben and his wounds.
Ben.
I know. She had the shotgun with her and the pistol, and she dropped them on the way.
You know what's weird is about 5 years later, a flood washed the shotgun into a wall where it was found by bystanders. The pistol and one of the machine guns were never found. But can you imagine 5 years after this incident, just walking on the beach and seeing the shotgun just roll in the tide?
That's scary. Haunting. Ugh. It's haunting.
Yeah, it is.
Hawila made it back with his party and with Elmer Robinson and 12 armed guards.
They're all late.
They found Ben suffering from his wounds. Ben was taken to Waimea Hospital on Kauai, where he made a full recovery, thank goodness. What a beast of a man.
I cannot even believe it.
That is insane. And
to get
Ben,
shot in the stomach, the groin, and the leg.
And still keep fighting.
Oh. Yeah.
And Ben was rightly awarded the Medal for Merit and the Purple Heart.
Yay, Ben. What about Ella?
He
what did she get?
It. Ella did not receive any official recognition.
I mean, technically, Ella lost her shit and bashed the guy's brains in with a rock.
Yeah, technically she's the one who subdued him.
Yeah.
You know, subdued with finger quotes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that.
Agreed.
Just
yeah.
A little unfair. Mm-hmm.
Very brave. Little. Very brave on her part.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, grabbing his arm when he went for the pistol.
I know.
Can you even imagine?
I know. And Yoshio's right there.
Like, that's what I was thinking.
So brave.
That's
what do you
insane.
Think Yoshio was doing?
Yeah, he was probably in shock. He was like, they just hulked out, like shit going down. Oh, wow. Okay. Sorry. So what about the whereabouts of Ishimatsu? You know, the guy that fled in the woods that was all afraid because he made a mistake. He couldn't get Hawila to give him the papers and the gun.
Hawila, right. He couldn't get Hawila to give him the papers. Yeah, so he was hiding in the woods. So Ishimatsu was found in the woods, and he was sent to prison at a Japanese internment camp on the mainland.
Yeesh.
Irene, Yoshio's wife, the one who turned up the music on the phonograph so that Yoshio could overpower the guard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Irene was apprehended and was also sent to an internment camp on Oahu. After some time in the internment camps, both of them returned to Niihau. And in 1960, Ishimatsu became an American citizen.
Yeah. Ironic.
Irene moved to the island of Kauai and lived out the rest of her days there. She always maintained her innocence, but did say in a 1992 interview with a Japanese news outlet that the pilot did gain her sympathies when he was detained on the island back in 1941.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
What was the aftermath of this incident, which is really dramatic? You're right. Like, this really floored me.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of significant effects on American society, specifically on public perception and policy. So, you know, people were already fearful of Japanese Americans and suspicious towards them because Japan was an enemy. Right. And so this incident just fueled that perception, that distrust, that paranoia. And as a result, President Roosevelt signed an executive order in February 1942 that led to the internment of over 100,000 Japanese Americans in camps across the United States.
I know I've said this before many times to you, but Franklin D. Roosevelt, not my favorite Roosevelt.
Just no? Saying.
No, not at all. I like a Teddy. I'm a Teddy or an Eleanor?
Eleanor. You got to go with Eleanor.
I do like Eleanor. She's a mystery.
She's the best.
She's sweet. But I do like Teddy. Like, just the fact that, like, Teddy, like, left for, like, months at a time to explore the national parks when he was president. Like, that's kind of funny. It's like, where's the president? I don't know. He's in Utah.
Right. Well, this executive order really marked a dark chapter in American history because Japanese American citizens were imprisoned during the war.
Yeah. You know, we don't talk about it a lot. I mean, when do we ever talk about it? But there were Japanese in prison camps or.
Yeah.
The same kind of cramp that grandma and grandpa were in,
yeah.
Japanese Americans were in on American soil in the United States. We had internment camps.
Right. So obviously, I mean, I don't know. It's complicated, right?
I mean.
Because were some of them probably spies? Possibly. Yes. I mean, I don't know. But is the way to handle it to round up everybody with a Japanese last name and stick them in a camp? No, that's not the that's
yeah.
probably not the best response, dude.
Why do you think this story is important today and what can we gain from looking back at it? And the response. And the response.
I was gonna ask you the same question. I mean, obviously, one major takeaway is the danger of prejudice, the danger of paranoia, and how easily fear can lead to scapegoating entire communities, because that is never right.
Right. No, 100%.
That is never right.
When you, Jennifer, you and I just had a conversation about how people should not act out of fear or anger anytime.
Right.
But these events, the internment of the Japanese Americans, is a reminder how quickly our rights as Americans could be taken away, regardless if you of your status as an American citizen.
Right.
If your group that you're associated with is like deemed like unfit or unsavory or crazy, they'll be like, nope, you in camp.
Or dangerous to national security. If you are, I guess, have a name associated with a group that could be deemed, you know, a danger to national security, then, you know, I guess you are susceptible.
There has to be a balance between security and the rights of the people of the state.
There's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way to protect our national security than, anyway. It's sad because you do see in very recent years how entire communities have suffered the backlash. Entire communities of honest, hardworking American citizens being preyed upon, being...
For retaliation.
Being retaliated against because of some ethnic group's actions somewhere else. And
what's interesting... That's never right. What's interesting is that I am under the perception, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it seems like ethnic groups other than like white Americans, they seem like an individual can cause a stigma or a prejudice throughout communities as opposed to just an individual doing bad things, right? Like when a white man shoots somebody in America, they're not like, oh,
all white men.
Exactly.
We're not taking that all name. Yeah.
Right. But if a Muslim does something or if a Jewish person does something or, you know what
I mean? A minority group,
exactly. Then it's like a big deal. And like, oh, we need to fight back against all these people. It's some,
all right. Let's back down
bullshit.
Off. Let's back down bullshit. Off the soapbox. Let's
That's
back
what
down.
I'm saying. No, let's I like down. It up here. Let's I like down. It up here.
Who is our voiceless?
I honestly... I feel like Ella should be a voiceless because that's messed up.
That's messed up. 100%.
Like, she should have got some kind of accolades.
She should have gotten the purple award, whatever, the purple heart or some award, because it was really her. She did it.
She did it.
She did it.
And I'm not saying that Ben isn't magnificent.
Ben is great. I love Ben.
Who doesn't love Ben? I mean, I love Ben, but Ella was there too.
I know. What about poor Hawila, who had the worst week of his life?
Oh, my God. Hawila, I feel so bad for you.
I hope he got some kind of recognition.
You know what needed to happen? You know that show that like redoes like total home makeover for your house, like when some bad shit happens?
Yes.
That's what needed to happen to Hawila. Yes. They needed to bring Ty Pennington and the crew
to rebuild.
Yes. Move that bus. And then it's a beautiful new house without an airplane wreckage in front of it.
I love that. Let's make that happen.
Jennifer, what about our hits?
You know, obviously, that Japanese World War II connection was so strong with me. I'm sure that it led us to this story. What about you?
100% it led us to this story. That's what I led with in the research. Mm. What about poor communication between the islands, between people?
Yeah. Well, all of the above. Because there was no telephone service, and the people on Niihau, not only could they not easily communicate with the other islands, but also they couldn't communicate with the pilot. And there was not communication between the Japanese-speaking Hawaiians and the native Hawaiians.
What about your hit on fires?
Well, the pilot and Yoshio set fire to Hawila's house and property.
And the plane. Mm-hmm. It's not right. Mm-mm. And the private island? Are you kidding me?
No.
How do you own one of the Hawaiian islands, Robinson family? And are you adopting?
You're a little old to be adoptable.
I'm a big responsibility, and I can make myself a tax deduction.
Jill, I was looking into, you know how you were talking about seeing the woman weaving a mat?
Yes.
Niihau is known for their woven mats.
Stop your face.
I swear, that was one of the things that it was known for. They make the best woven mats. So that
You're
is
lying.
Just another, I'm not. That's just another validation that we were drawn to this story. That's an important hit that I didn't want you to leave out.
Well, this is a great story. And like I said, I am not interested in the theater of World War II in the Pacific, but this story, they should have led with the story. That's all I have to say. If they would have led with the story in history class, I would have paid more attention.
Well, I hope that our listeners feel the same way and that it is an interesting and entertaining story and also gives you something to think about.
Hey, you know what I'm going to do now?
Please tell the people where they can find us.
Yes. How do you know? Okay. So check out our website, commonmystics.net. Find us on all our socials at Common Mystics Pod. Please download, listen, and subscribe wherever you're hearing your favorite podcast. And thank you guys so much for leaving new reviews on Apple. We got the kindest one the other day. Thank you so much. It makes us so happy.
Oh my gosh. And we are up to 490 subscribers. So some Yay. Of you listened and subscribed. Thank you
so much.
Please continue to subscribe. And we got another tier one patron. I love our tier one patrons.
Tier one patrons, thank you so much.
You guys are really the best. All our patrons. Oh my gosh.
All our patrons. But the tier one is for $3.
Yeah.
And it's like they just, for a cup of coffee a month, they just support us because they like us. And that means so much.
Thank you. We love you.
But tiers two and above get like freebies, but not one. They just do it because they like us.
I wouldn't call them freebies because they're paying. So they get extra content.
Extras. Okay, extras.
You guys get extras. Extra. Check us out on Patreon. Thank you so much for listening. We love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a Common Mystics Media production. Editing done by Yokai Audio, Kalamazoo, Michigan.